Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Away. nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the brothers Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. It's Old Shaziz here. I'm out here in my mad science laboratory. I've been fortunate enough to be joined by my friend Steve. How you doing there, buddy?
How you doing, Shaziz?
Pretty good. Hey, you was telling me you're getting ready to go off to the Philippines. That sounds like a really interesting trip.
I have a pipe dream to go there, but that's not necessarily the same thing.
Well, I hope you make it there, brother, because what we were talking about, going over there setting up an aquaponics system for them, that's a pretty amazing deal, man, and it'd be very beneficial for them.
Well, the amount of damage that's happened out there, the local political corruption that's stopping the aid getting to the people that it needs to, and I have friends there, if you're listening in, guys, and you know, need to start putting pressure on your politicians to make sure that your donations are not chewed up by corruption. Because there's a lot of it going on out there.
Seems like that's a worldwide deal there, brother. That stinks.
Yeah, there's people dying there, Shaziz, from starvation and lack of resources. Things like clean water, basic electrical functions. As I understand it, though, Lake University near Tacloban City will be open for the spring semester. And they've got students and lecturers going out checking to make sure that a lot of the electrical circuitry in that area is safe. So there are actions being taken, but they're going to hope to have about 65 people in total going around the local area checking the electrical stuff, making sure it's safe to use. So I mean, that's impressive to me.
Yeah, that is, that's pretty good stuff. You know, you was talking about they have some problems with resources and stuff like that, and I can relate to that because we also had a bit of a conversation about why it is I can't get my doggone generators and all that stuff up and running. I mean, I got the knowledge in my head. I know exactly how to do it. I know that it will work and everything. It's just a simple case of, you know, when I go to build something, I don't have access to, like, precision tools in order to get things to be perfectly balanced or sealed up. Like, I've had a nightmare with my plasma reactor with leaks and everything like that, and I know the thing will function like I say it will, but the problem is I'm running into hurdles trying to, you know, patch this and duct tape that and cover it with epoxy resin or whatever to try to seal up all the doggone leaks, and it just isn't happening. And then here recently, since the weather's gotten you know, really cold due to global warming, the doggone thing, the epoxy resin cracked on it, and so now I got even more leaks than I had before. So now it's pretty much I'm going to end up scrapping that one and starting off fresh. And so I need to build a whole new reaction chamber that's not going to, you know, be leaking, obviously, for safety purposes. It's not good to have a stream of argon coming out when you're pumping high voltage to it. But it's just a simple case of, you know, I'm working with mostly crap, you know, recycled stuff, trying to get things together, and it's just, it slows you down. You know, you try to find something, you know, my initial deal was I wanted to be able to make the stuff out of just pure junk, you know, just so that the average Joe could grab something off the store shelf and just slap it together and bam, it'll work. But unfortunately, you know, it just, it's not as easy as it sounds. I mean, I can produce electricity, there's no problem at all, you know, but to get it to the quality to actually run the inefficient stuff that we've got today, it's a nightmare. You know, I'm trying to track down some of them direct drive stator motors. I've got a line in on some, but so far there ain't none coming in yet. But, you know, if I can get a hold of some of those, I can actually build one with things that are off the store shelf that would be pretty doggone powerful. And I've got a whole lot of other projects that I'm trying to get off the ground as well. But once again, it's all about resources, materials, and, you know, If we could get a bunch of guys from all over the world that had knowledge from all different subjects, and we could put them in a machine shop with all the materials that they needed, there isn't nothing we couldn't build. You know what I'm saying?
I really do think that it's time that the, I suppose you call it, alternative energy groups put together their own A-team. You know, you tie up the A-team, you stick them in a shed with a welding torch and some basic tractor equipment, and they'll come out with a tank. You know, where's our A-team?
I agree, and to some extent we're trying like heck to get this done, and we do have a couple resources on the way to help us do this, to get virtual labs off the ground. Now, that'll be beneficial because, you know, if I do have a problem that I can't solve, such as a piece that needs to be made, there's somebody out there who will be watching in on the lab will say, hey, you know, I've got access to this these tools over here. I can make this and ship it to you, and we can have it together in a day or two or whatever, you know. But that's the whole deal, you know. There's a lot of really brilliant individuals out there that have the knowledge on how to do this stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason why we haven't solved these issues already. We all have the technology. Most of us just don't have all the tools that we need. You know, you can't build a car if you ain't got some wrenches and, you know, the right tools to put the parts together. So you're at the mercy of going through the system to one of the mechanics and paying them, you know, $55 to $100 an hour to work on your car, when if you had the actual tools themselves, it wouldn't take you 15, 20 minutes to throw a starter or something on there. You know what I mean?
Well, I've never asked for a single donation in, what, nearly 2 years of coming on radio stations. But if there's anybody out there with a few quid in their pocket that's feeling like that they believe in what a lot of the people in the alternative area are trying to do, then donate a 3D printer to Shaziz.
Wow, that would be amazing, brother. You know,
you have to think of it from this way, Shaziz. A lot of what people are attempting to do, we're being told you can't do. So you're not going to achieve your set goals by using things that other people have manufactured for a different purpose.
Yeah, I tried, but, you know, it's like, you know, somebody once told me about, we had gotten this big old discussion about creation and the Big Bang Theory and all this kind of stuff and the chaos and all this kind of jazz. Well, I told him, I said, look, take a 1,000-piece puzzle and slam that sucker on the floor over and over and over and over again and see how long it actually takes you to get that 1,000-piece puzzle to land all put together, you know? And this is, you know, when you talk about order out of chaos, this is exactly what I'm having to deal with, because I'm trying to take a 1,000-piece puzzle, slam it on the floor, and hope that it's going to come together without no hitches. But so far, you know the odds of it. It's pretty slim. And so I can build and I can give ideas. I can do all these things and give people the ideas throughout the world on how to build things. You know, I was listening to Muddy's radio show, and he had a really brilliant guest on there, and they were talking about heating up some water and causing it to spew up like an old coffee pot. And as I'm listening to him thinking about this thing, I was thinking that if you could actually build a fire pit below the water level and have this fire pit heat the water to the point of steam, you could get this steam to actually spew up to the top, just like the coffee pot. And all you'd have to do is every once in a while feed some logs in there, but the steam pressure that would be coming up out of there, it'd be like capping off a geyser and using that geyser to generate electricity. So what the guy's talking about doing on a small scale is plausible to do on a large scale, if you know what I mean. But
well, let's not forget, Shaziz, that 2,500 years ago, the Romans were building massive villas, 10,000 square feet villas with underfloor heating systems.
Well, see, and there you go. There's another thing right there. My main subject that I was going to talk about today is copper, and I noticed you sent a good link inside the Skype right here. I'll try to copy it and send it out into the chat room, unless you have it already still in your cut and paste thing. But
I'm chucking it in the chat room, no problem.
I did send a link into the Shaziz chat room. It's a Wikipedia deal on copper, and you'd be amazed at the history of copper. Copper goes all the way back to the Egyptians, and probably even farther back than that. And it has so many different really good qualities to it that it's just amazing material. And it's just one of many materials that, you know, nature's provided. But, you know, when you try to get these things refined, there's a big lengthy process to get it done right. You know, there's a difference between copper sulfate and copper oxide, one being better for conductor of electricity, you know, and, you know, your copper wire would be, you know, the best, highest quality, 0.99 or whatever percent, you know, pure. But there's so many different. We've only probably extracted probably 10% of the world's copper, you know, and we've been reusing the same copper over and over and over for all these years. But the fact that way back when, you know, before the industrial age, these folks back there knew about copper as well, you know, it's amazing stuff. What do you think?
Well, part of West Cork, Castletown there, my wife's family come from that region, and there's quite a large area of abandoned copper mines in that region that date back to the Bronze Age. So, I mean, Bronze Age is just on the edge of the last ice age, really, I guess.
Yeah, and for those...
Not the Bronze Age.
They actually used a mixture of copper and other stuff in to make the bronze, you know, so there you go, man.
We're talking the first metal that mankind widely used was bronze, an alloy of copper and tin. Although this new technology arrived in Europe around 4000 BC, it didn't reach Ireland for another 2000 years. Well, I mean, the Irish have been digging up copper for a very, very, very long period of time. One of the things about copper as well is you can see it in coastal areas because it has a very blue colour to it. What some people might be aware of as well in horticulture is if you put copper into the soil around a rhododendron, it will change the colour of it, it'll change it blue. You can actually change the colour of flowers for certain plants by the trace minerals and elements that you put into the soil next to them.
That's really cool. And also, copper has antimicrobial. We talked about that a bit before we came on air. And, you know, it has other benefits as well. But, man, it's an amazing material. And I saw this documentary on there. If you, for those out there listening, go out there and Google how it's made and just watch the documentary that they did on it. It's pretty amazing stuff. But we got access to it, and, you know, depending on the quality, will depend on, you know, how good of, you know, electricity you can get out of it, obviously. But, you know, I'm just fascinated with it, you know. You were talking earlier about it actually helping build the immune system up in plants. Want to elaborate on that here?
It seems that a lot of the trace elements, especially some sort of metals and minerals like zinc and copper, are known to actually improve the immune system of a lot of plants. So, there's three main elements that you use to grow plants. That's nitrogen, potassium and phosphate. But there's also other 13 other trace elements, including things like boron and molybdenum, which I can never pronounce correctly, but amongst those is zinc and copper, and both are known to improve and boost the immune system of the plant and fight off diseases.
Well, you know, a long time ago, whenever I was thinking about, you know, when we were running plumbing and stuff like that, I was thinking about, you know, how safe copper actually is, and that's before I actually saw this documentary and did a little bit of research on it. But, I have no problems with copper piping, and I guess that probably explains why those folks out here who are making, moonshine like to use copper. So they're purifying in a couple ways, man.
I wonder about that, because water carries electrical signals and copper carries electrical signals. So if you're running water through copper, are they charging each other?
Well, it's probably a really good possibility, you know. I mean, it's just such an amazing material. And, you know, you can't overlook aluminum and stainless and all that, because they also have their really good electric qualities. I like the cheap old stainless steel for picking up radiant energy. You know, China makes some really good crappy stainless steel that's really good for my experiments. And, you know, I also like the fact that aluminum, you know, you've got a lot of capacitance that you can build really awesome capacitors out of aluminum. So we have all the technology to, you know, tap into the energy that the Earth has provided for us. It's just, once again, it falls back down to resources. Who has the best resources? You know, these corporations out here that have access to multi-million dollar lathes and planing equipment and all that, they can draft up on their CAD program something and have a laser cutter cut it out and all that kind of stuff. Well, if the average Joe goes over there to have somebody at a machine shop cut it out, you have to order at least 100 pieces, and they have to, you know, you have to pay in advance in order to get that done. Well, you're talking about a whole lot of money right out of the gate. You know what I mean?
I mean, the level of my ability to be able to research what I want to do is, I have a sunflower just next to me that's never seen the sun.
Well, that's pretty doggone impressive in itself, that you are able to, you know, using some lighting, you know, duplicate what it is that the plant actually needs out of the sun. And once again, I need to provide you a power source so that you can do what it is that you're doing without having to pay the man for electricity.
I had a bit of an epiphany about the way our society is structured for energy production. And it seems that there's two levels of energy, that one we've learned how to harness and one that we're just on the verge of understanding, or we've understood for a long time but it hasn't been released to us, whichever way you want to look at it really. But you've got the destructive force of combustion and explosion, and then you've got the alternative forces of implosion. Now, I'm starting to see this sort of term implosion coming up with the idea of hydrogen. You know, hydrogen doesn't explode, it implodes. And wherever you get explosion, you get destruction and chaos. So if we can find a way of extracting energy without blowing things up, that would be quite helpful.
Well, and I believe Tesla showed us how to actually do that. But, you know, like, once again, it comes down to, you know, being able to put things together precision. You know, I can make a generator out of junk, and I can produce some seriously high voltage. That's not a problem.
One simple example of how a 3D printer could make life so significantly easier would be down to the armature device that you can take out of a standard drill. Say a 750-watt drill. You take the armature out, and then you have to set it in quite precise positions to be able to pick up the energy field from it. If you've got a 3D printer, all you got to do is input the parameters and it'll print something exactly the right shape to slot that armature in, so your brushes will be at an equidistant point exactly where you want them.
Yeah.
And it could take an hour.
And it beats what I'm trying to do, like use hot glue to hold that same armature into the right position. And you know that as the hot glue's either heated up or cooling down, expanding or contracting, it's taking it just a fraction enough off to where I'm not getting the full potential out of what it is that I'm trying to do. But with that 3D printer idea like you're talking about, you know, I could save days, months, and years just trying to, you know, just print something out. You know what I mean?
Well, even down to the point of cogs, wheels, and pulleys, what are you going to use an armature device for? Well, you're going to stick a blade on, a turbine blade on the front of it and use it as a windmill.
Yep.
Which is all great and well until you want to try and use some sort of gearing system to be able to apply that power to maybe a flywheel and kick out a lot more energy.
Well, and that, you know, once again, that's the same thing. You know, you want to put a decent windmill out there, you need some precision bearings. Now, Muddy, he's been pretty good about getting his things down, you know, his actual flux wind turbines and building his own props and stuff like that. You know, but that takes a lot of, you know, a lot of knowledge, and looks like it says we got an internet connection problem. You hearing me all right?
Loud and clear at the minute.
All right, cool. So, once again, you know, modern
technology. Well, it's probably just our NSA friends dropping in to see what we're talking about.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Anyway, you know, I just, to me, I find it frustrating that I know how to do things, and it's just a matter of, like, yesterday, I began to revisit my neodymium magnet accelerator project. And I found a better tubing, which is some VEX, or what the heck they call this? It's plumbing tubing. Oh, PEX. PEX plumbing. I found some really good tubing that would work perfect on there if I could get the doggone thing bent in a perfect circle. And I tried heating it up with a hair dryer, and trying to get this stuff to bend around, but this stuff is so when it starts to cool down, it starts to straighten out again.
Yeah.
And so it's an aggravating deal trying to get some sort of precision out of something that, you know, could be actually, if you had the right tools, you could actually mold a circular tube, you know, that would be, you know, perfect for what it is that I need to do. I need to be able to spin these magnets around in a perfect circle so that I can energize with one coil and pick up energy off of the rotation with another coil. And so that's what slowed me down on that project right there. It's just, you know, trying to work with junk is what's killing me, you know. If you're in a third world country and that's all you got to work with, you can do a lot of stuff with junk. But to get it down to actual precision is the trick.
One of the joys of a 3D printer is a lot of the resources that we might have access to are mass produced. And even if it's a different brand of drill, it could be the same armature from the same manufacturer.
Yeah.
So once you've made a design to create a housing for that armature to hold it where you need it to extract the energy from it, you can put that plan on the internet, and then anybody can make them.
Yeah, and like
that is one of the joys of. I mean, they're talking about file sharing, and you've got those two lads that are in America, and I think in Texas, that are doing 3D printable guns. Well, yeah, it's nice to build stuff that destroys, but it's also nice to build stuff that helps you create and survive as well. And that's one of the sides of it that I think people need to concentrate on a bit more. The 3D printers aren't a fad. They're literally Star Trek replicators in their first generation.
Yeah, and I use I use two-part epoxy resin to make my flywheels for a lot of my generators, and a lot of people use epoxy resin or fiberglass resin to make their flywheels for their actual flux generators and stuff like that. But with a 3D printer, heck, you could just print the doggone flywheel out, snap your magnets in place, and you're done. You know, you don't have to worry about centrifugal force ripping it apart as long as it's made with the right material or whatever. Or if you just need to actually make a mold, you know, you could print out a mold and then pour your resin that way. That way you'd actually get, you know, without, if you look at one of my little mini generators, it's got one heck of a wobble to it. It is not precise at all.
We're not craftsmen, are we, Shivers?
No, we're.
I mean, we've got some mad ideas, but we're certainly not master tradesmen.
No, definitely not. But the ideas are there, man. The knowledge is there. The knowledge is there to build self-powered generators, so self-charging cars and motorcycles. It's just that the system, the way it's been set up, you know, I wish that back during Tesla and Edison's time that these guys would have thought so far ahead in the future to actually benefit mankind as far as making it so that the average Joe could, you know, understand it perfectly and actually build it. But, you know, once again, everybody patented, copyrighted, and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, power struggles for money and ideas. It just basically, all as far as I'm concerned, it put a roadblock in front of guys like myself here in the future, because we could be so far, so much further advanced than what we are right now if we had the open sharing of ideas and technology like, you know, we're trying to do here in the alternative energy community. What do you think? You still there? Uh-oh. Apparently I lost Steve.
Yeah, I was... Yeah, you were fading in and out a little bit there.
Sorry about that. It's probably that modern technology again, you know.
Oh, it's probably those NSA boys showing off, you know, flexing the muscles, saying, you know, we're in charge of you.
Well, you know, the thing that they don't realize is that they're not just screwing us, they're screwing themselves, man, because just think about how much further we could be advanced as a society had we not had all the brick walls that we had to climb or dig under or go around or whatever. I mean, we got so many brilliant minds out here in all these different networks that are rebroadcasting and broadcasting live or whatever, you know. We got so many brilliant minds that if we could get all these guys in one place at one time and without any hindrances and with all the resources necessary, I'm a firm believer. There is nothing that we could not create. There's nothing we couldn't solve if we weren't up against the wall, so to speak.
There's a lot of lonely men sitting in the expensive palaces, Jesus.
Yeah, well, you
know. Ask a multi-millionaire at the end of his life if it was all worth it. You wonder what they'd say at the end of it. Because a lot of them, they get to the point where they're so rich that they can't really circulate with normal people anymore.
Well, and it's a damn shame, because if I was the one sitting on that pile of gold and had an opportunity of a lifetime, you know, because your average lifespan these days is like 60, 80 to 90, maybe 100 years if you're extremely lucky and eat well and take care of yourself. But you got an opportunity to accomplish something to make the world a better place, you know. And if it wasn't for greed and stupidity, then this world could be an awesome place. I'm a firm believer that we literally have the tools, the technology, the capability, all the resources available to literally create a heaven on earth. And yet, what do we do with it, you know? You know, we, the average Joe, we try to do what we can to benefit each other. But when you talk about the corporate elite of the world and the governments of the world, the supposed representatives, you're not getting a damn thing out of them other than war and more death and destruction and ignorance. You know, if you can spend $1 trillion to go over and bomb the crap out of a foreign nation, bomb them back into the Stone Age, and then go back there and spend another couple billion or trillion dollars to rebuild them and try to force your beliefs on them, then you should have been able to, from the get-go, take and use those funds and those resources to go over and benefit them instead. And I'm saying, you know, you lead by example. If you go over and bomb the crap out of them, you're definitely not going to make no friends. If you go over there and you benefit their lives and you show them how to do things better, you know, and you do something positive for them, they're more apt to like you than they would be after you just got through mopping them into the Stone Age. What do you think?
I think it's about time we started thinking about how we're helping the world. Do we really assist a foreign nation by causing more problems than they've already got?
Well, you know, I agree with you 100%. It don't take 30, 40, 50 years to solve starvation in the world. It just doesn't do. It doesn't take that. We have the food. We have the resources. You've got the technology right now. You know how to make an aquaponics system that could feed a whole lot of people. Now, why ain't they asking you, Steve, hey, you know, you either want to help or you want to teach some people how to do this aquaponics, and then we will fund you to get all these things put around so that these people ain't starving? When's the last time the representatives came to you and made it easy for you to do it even in your own house?
Well, they're not interested in people being self-reliant. They want people to be reliant on government, because then they say, oh, well, you know, you need to give us this money so we can take care of this. Well, they don't. They put it into a consolidated fund and then pay a few bills out of it, and the rest goes to the UK Crown.
And people are wondering,
there's no point paying taxes in this country, mate. It all goes to England.
People are wondering why there's guys like myself and Steve and others out there that finally end up getting depressed, because, you know, here we got some ideas, we got some solutions. Nobody's willing to listen to them, and even those who are willing to listen to them, we can't get the resources to them. We see that we could make the world a better place, but yet we're watching all the crime and the corruption and the ignorance continue. I mean, right now, Steve, you got the holy grail of food to take around and show people actually how to do this for themselves. But you don't have the resources necessary to do it on such a large scale as to benefit society the way that we're talking about. And so this is why I think these alternative networks such as No Borders and Awake Radio and We Roar and Shaziz Radio and all the other networks that are gracious enough to rebroadcast this, this is why I believe that this is such an important thing, is because we're bringing average Joes together. We're not asking for the government's permission, you know. We're just trying to do it. We're just trying to share as much information as fast as best that we possibly can using the technology and the tools that we have available. And apparently they don't like that because we have a whole hell of a lot of technical problems. You know what I mean?
Well, in my search for a way to be independent of all of these booms and busts and cycles and the rest of it, a couple of things became apparent to me. One is that I need land. You cannot support yourself from the land if you haven't got any.
Yep.
So, I mean, the average house has maybe one third of an acre of a garden. That is not big enough. You need a bit more land than that. Not much, but maybe about 1 acre for every household. Minimum, absolute minimum, just to grow your food on. So I don't have enough land to do it. But another thing that became apparent as well is, even if you're not doing it in a commercial capacity, everything that produces food now seems to be regulated by the European Union. I mean, one of the instances is in Spain. Now you need a license for a chicken or a rabbit, because they eat a lot of hares and rabbits in Spain. But you have to apply for a license from that, from the Spanish government. If you want to use a particular type of fish in Ireland, you need to go through the Irish Marine Institute to get permission to import certain species of fish like tilapia to use in aquaponic systems. And their concerns are a little bit ludicrous, because they're concerned about the fish getting into the local water systems and reproducing, because it's not a native species, but it's a warm water fish. So you stick it in cold water, it goes dormant, it doesn't lay eggs. Its reproductive system does not work in the temperatures of Irish waters.
Yeah, and how how stupid is it to make it illegal to actually collect rainwater? Or to charge somebody taxes to breathe, you know? We breathe out CO2. I told somebody one time about, oh, it's cost you to breathe if you have to pay carbon tax, and they're like, oh, that's crazy. Well, what, it, really? Is it? Because you're breathing out CO2, and that's what they're hollering about, you know? But yet, here's all this technology out here that could run cars on electrical and so many different things, hydrogen, you know, but yet these corporations don't want to, they don't want to do it. I mean, because it takes money out of their pocket. It's all, we all go back to the same damn thing every time we talk about any of these subjects. It's all about that lonely man sitting up on top of that mountain of gold, and then at the end of his life, regretting that he didn't do more for humanity than he did, you know? You can't build a stairway to heaven. You just can't do it, you know? It don't work that way.
At the end of the day, we're a tribal species. I think that's one of the things that I've come to discover about traveling all around the world, is there's very small regional tribes everywhere. Everywhere you go, you've got a little click here and a little click there. But if we can get to the point of considering ourselves as one tribe everywhere, we're all cousins, we're all brothers and sisters, no matter which race or colour or whatever we are, we're going to be in a much better place. But that's going to be a psychological step that humanity is going to have to take at some point, or else we're going to end up destroying ourselves.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it's really super important, as far as I'm concerned, to empower the average Joe to actually believe in themselves. That's the hard part, man. You know,
it's not only that, it's trying to maintain that in your own mind that you should do good, not harm.
Yeah.
That's a real struggle as well in the world we live in, because so many people do harm. But when you actively stay there and, well, I don't really want to participate in that because, for one, it doesn't benefit me, and two, it harms everybody else. You know, you're looked as you're a lunatic.
Well, a prime example of what you're talking about is if you go somewhere and you got the idea to help people out, and you get there and there's, like, let's say you got a shop full of people and you guys have everything that you need, and everybody's sitting around arguing and bickering over who's right, and it's just total chaos, and people are yelling and fighting and all that kind of stuff, and you go in there with your idea and you try to get somebody's attention, try to wake them up, and they just ain't listening, they're just fighting and fussing and raising a hell. You know, after a while, you get to the point where you're so aggravated, you're saying, you know, I'm fed up. I'm walking away. I'm taking my ideas and I'm heading on down the road. And that's exactly how the average Joe who's out here trying to work in the alternative community, when you see guys in the alternative energy community they're sitting there arguing amongst each other's self, or instead of, you know, hey, okay, I see your project, I'll try to build one myself, and maybe I can troubleshoot it and find problems. Instead, they want to sit there and call you something like a dumbass or whatever. Oh, that won't work. That's against the second law of thermodynamics or the laws of physics or whatever. And, you know, you get nothing accomplished. So, you know, there's the problem. You know, you got to get people in the mindset that no matter what, you're going to overcome these problems, but you're going to do it together. You know, agree to disagree in a respectful manner and get something done instead of sitting around arguing over it. Am I wrong?
I think that's one of the tricks that's used mostly. That's why they have politics and, to a certain extent, religion, although I wouldn't put religion fully in there, is to keep us arguing with each other.
Yeah, divide and conquer, man. And the key to the power of what it is, the power of the people, is actually getting together and working with one another, as opposed, you know, we're talking to people all over the globe right now. We're talking to, you know, people in over 260 countries. And, you know, these folks, they got ideas, you got ideas, and together we can put these ideas, you know, to work and make something happen.
I mean, I've got no doubt whatsoever that there's some sort of group of people that are directing resources and interests on this planet that we're not fully aware of. I've got no doubt about that whatsoever. But I don't think that they go out inherently to do harm. I just think that they've got more than they can manage, and their interference is making it worse.
Well, I agree. I agree. You know,
so that's, I mean, these big global elites, this is a personal plea from me.
Jock,
I just want you to leave me the hell alone.
Jock Gibson's listening into the deal, and he said he's a farmer, and he says you talk talking truth about licensing for having animals. You know, you gotta make sense.
Shaziz, the reason for that in the European Union is you are considered a primary food producer, and therefore automatically come under regulation, whether this is for commerce or private use. But at the same time, you've got a constitution that protects your right to have privacy in your own home.
Well, the problem is...
You can't have privacy on one hand, and then private companies that are funded by government taxation, semi-state corporations, if you want to call them that, coming into your home and then telling you what you can and can't do. I mean, that doesn't work with me. The two can't match.
Well, so I agree. The problem is they keep wiping their feet on our constitutions, you know. Our constitutions are simply an agreement that these are the powers that we will, you know, give to the representatives to benefit, you know, all of humanity. But yet they've abused these powers to such an extent, there's a regulation on everything. And if you fart, you're regulated. I mean, that methane's a global warming gas, according to the mainstream science guys. So, you know, you're going to have to charge you taxes if you eat some beans or something like that. It's just so stupid. It's so ludicrous. It's almost laughable whenever you think about what it is that they're doing. But it's not funny in the sense that they're basically hindering the progress, and we could actually solve starvation. You know, what's the guy over there in Libya that they went over and murdered, essentially? Gaddafi. Yeah, he was trying to dig a trench from the ocean inward to unite all of Africa and give them water so that they could you know, grow food and stuff. But you know,
yeah, he had processing facility that made the biggest steel pipes in the world. He was literally making a artificial river.
Well, and that's something that could have benefited. Now, I'm sure.
Well, not only that, Gaddafi was into other stuff as well. I mean, he might have been a bit of a lunatic, but one of the things that he said was the whole tent business was with Gaddafi was a political statement that, you know, everybody was entitled to a roof over their head.
Well, you know something.
Regardless.
Whatever.
And he wouldn't live in a building himself. He wasn't going to go and live in some big palace until everybody had a roof over their head. And even his own father, before he managed to get in the house, died in a tent.
whatever anybody thinks about him, here's a guy who was, whether he was a dictator or president or whatever, was able to drive around in a vehicle with no roof on it, you know, and you know, out there in public, and he wasn't being mopped or popped by his citizens around there, you know. So they must have liked him to some extent.
When was the last time Barack Obama flaked around the capital city in the beast, hanging out the sunroof, waving to people?
Oh, heck no. They got him in a limousine built like a Sherman tank on crack. You know, they don't want him blowed up or shot at or anything like that. But that says something about the leadership. If you have to go so far as to live in fear, you're living in fear because you must have done something that pissed off the average Joe out there. The average Joe isn't happy with your representation if they feel it necessary that it got to do you any harm. Now, I don't advocate...
Well, I'll tell you what, Chaziz, strike one for the Irish, eh? The beast. The presidential limousine is bulletproof, it's bomb-proof, it can repel a rocket-propelled grenade, it can withstand the blast of a landmine underneath it, but it can't even drive out of the US Embassy in Dublin without grounding.
Yeah, I saw that video. So there was one thing they didn't think of. They should have put it, make it four-wheel drive, you know.
The leader of the, I suppose you want to call it, the developed world, was beaten by Dublin City Council roadworks.
That's priceless, man. But again, you know, if the average Joe would have been troubleshooting it, they would have had like a redneck four-wheel drive, you know, big old wheel lift on that lift kit on that doggone limousine, and it would have went anywhere, you know. But, you know, like I said, you could have 100 people in the same room, and 99 of them got the wrong doggone answer, and one person got the right answer, and you can't get them to listen. This is the mindset we got to get people in. Out here in our world is to listen to one another, to pay attention to ideas and try to bring about real true change, you know, at a ground level, because you're not going to get it via any congressman or senator or representative of any sort from any nation. You're just not going to, it's not going to happen, because their hands are tied from the get-go, because they're either blackmailed, bought off, or shot, or they end up in a car crash or a plane crash.
Well, look at the woman that released Obama's long-form birth certificate. Wasn't she... was it a woman? I come across some article about the woman that had released the long-form birth certificate had died in a mysterious plane crash.
Well, it seems that a whole lot of people who have had any kind of information or any kind of dealings with the true identity of this particular individual end up, you know, meeting an untimely demise. And so that ought to say something in itself. When people start dropping like flies every time they question the system, you know, something's wrong with the system. You know, you just, if you can't speak out against the corruption, and we're supposed to have that right. That's supposed to be one of our rights. We're supposed to be able to shed off a corrupt government, but they're setting everything into place so that there's no way that we could physically do it. You know, it's the same thing back in the alternative energy community. You want to get away from fossil fuels, but yet you won't put resources or you want to put regulations on. It's going to stop us from doing something like what they do over there in Spain, trying to charge people for using solar power. Charge them taxes on it.
You know, I mean, of all of the absurdities, now the Spanish government claims to have ownership of the energy that's directed from the sun to our planet.
Yeah.
Because of what? They need to support a system where they take money from one group of people and give it to another group of people, whilst making sure that nobody can actually look after themselves anymore without this mechanism. It's madness to me. I don't need all of these regulations. I need you to leave me the hell alone so I can get on with it.
Well, I agree. The earth is three quarters covered in water, but yet you got to pay to you could go to jail for collecting rainwater. Are you kidding me?
Where exactly is that they're doing that?
Somewhere over here in the United States. I can't remember. I thought the last case I heard was something like either Illinois or Idaho or something like that. But the farmer made some ponds for his livestock, you know, and to irrigate his deal. And they said, oh, no, you can't do that. That's against the Watershed Act. Like, really? You know, come on, man. You know, CO2, carbon dioxide. The Australians pay the highest carbon tax in the world. Why? You know, there's other nations out there that pollute a hell of a lot more than Australia.
Well, because they're dumb as a box of rocks, that's why.
Well, it's just crazy, man.
I mean, if somebody walks up to you and says, you need to give me money, and you give it to them, they'll say, right, I'll come back next year about the same time. Thanks a lot.
Well, what's
fun? If they come up to you and say, you need to give me money, and you say, well, why, what for, what are you going to spend it on, what actual authority do you have to collect this? See, when we're born, Chizis, when your children were born, what did they owe anybody? What agreements did they have with anybody to supply them labor, goods, materials, services, intellect?
They didn't, but the system inadvertently, well, I guess directly, suckered the mother into basically signing a birth certificate deal, which basically put that kid off into slavery for the rest of his life and made him, agree on something he never even had the opportunity to open his mouth to say yay or nay on. And so to me, that's probably one of the biggest crimes against humanity, is that the kid didn't even have a choice. You know, it was done for him in his behalf. And then there's folks out there who have realized that there's a way around that system, because now that you're old enough and to make your own contracts, now if you have the right paperwork and you get it filled out exactly the way that it's supposed to, you can get out of the system and fend for yourself. But the system is set up so that once you get out of it, you're just as screwed as he was when you was in it, because now you can't do certain things without inadvertently signing a contract that you don't want to sign.
Well, this is where I'm getting to. We're all born free. And a lot of debt in the position that we find ourselves in are because of the restrictions that are put on us for the common good. I mean, there's a difference in perception. Do you perceive a birth certificate being an officially recognised name that individual can use to present themselves to the world with? Or is that birth certificate actually a contract that they're going to, say, collect revenue ahead of your potential to earn it throughout your lifespan? That's funding the country. I mean, I'd like to have an answer on the actual truth about that at the end of the day.
Well,
because there does seem to be some evidence that the latter is actually quite close to the truth.
The doggone Social Security number. When that thing first came out, the very first original Social Security cards here in the United States clearly stated on there not to be used for identification purposes. It was supposedly a retirement fund that when you pay into it as you go to work, they take a little money out of your pay and they put it in this account, and it saves back some money for you whenever you get to retirement age. And so you'll be able to have some money to live
on. If they don't spend it.
Yeah, that's the key. But the whole thing is, now, modern day society, you got police officers out there asking for your Social Security number as a form of identification. You can run your criminal record with your Social Security number, you know. And so here you go, you got what you was not supposed to be used as an identification purpose is now used by banks and businesses to track your financial and your medical and everything under the sun. And so, you know, with that said, when they come out with these great ideas, like these red light cameras, we're just going to put these here for safety of the community, you know, so we can, you know, keep an eye out, and, you know, if something happens, we'll have a record that, you know, we can prove or disprove that an accident was your fault or not or whatever, and we're not going to use these to enforce laws and fine you, you know, via the mail for speeding or whatever. And so everybody's like, oh, okay, that sounds like a good idea, you know, for the safety of the people. And then suddenly, years later, now they're using those same cameras to not only track you everywhere you go, but to send you fines in the mail for speeding or whatever that they feel that you done wrong. So you're under the watchful eye of Big Brother 24/7, no matter what you do. no matter how sneaky you think you are on the internet, somebody is even sneakier, and they're watching you, and they're listening to you, and they're documenting everything that you do and say on the internet. And corporations out there do the same damn thing, because they document wherever you go on the website via tracking cookies and other nifty little programs that you gladly say, I accept the terms of service. And so they do that so that they can market to you. If you go on a website for cars a lot, they'll send you emails and advertisements on cars so they can sell you a car. So where did your freedom go? You signed it away. You said, I agree to the terms of services, and you essentially was agreed to have the terms of services for the government taken care of you before you was ever even able to actually sign a contract. You know, legally here, you can't sign a contract unless you're 18 years of age. But yet, a baby is signed into a contract before he's ever even knows what a contract is.
I believe that one of the reasons why developed countries get really panicky when people don't register their children, because if their children are not in the system, then they can't derive revenue from them.
Yeah, that's the whole damn thing, man. Revenue. It all comes down to revenue. It all comes down to that man sitting on top of that pile of gold. He figured out a way to manipulate the system to keep the funds flowing to his bank account, and here you got the average Joe trying to seriously benefit humanity, and we're up against brick walls financially, physically, emotionally, and legally, and everything under the sun just to try to do something to solve the world's problems, you know? Like I said, it don't take no 30, 40, 50 years to solve starvation in the world. We have the knowledge. We have the technology. We have the capability.
Well, the United Nations has a very simple solution to starvation when they go to areas where they want to grow sugar beet and the farmers either don't, won't, or can't, is they send in mercenaries and have them shot.
Yeah, there you go.
Nobody ever starves once they're dead. I mean, yeah, and then you get some sugar beet and you make biofuels.
And if you talk about depopulation of the world, you're a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy nut, because why would the government want to depopulate the world? Well, come on, man. Anytime there's a doggone war over there, somebody's being depopulated. You know, you can't go into a war and not know that you're going to kill somebody. I mean, so there is prior knowledge there ahead of time that, yeah, we're going to go in there and there's going to be so much collateral damage, and, you know, we're going to get our point across, and we're going to force our views and opinions on these folks. We're going to bring to them democracy.
Oh, didn't have, wasn't Germany a democratic socialist republic?
And they had a really good democratic view whenever they started mopping people, you know.
I mean, if that, to me, that is the start of democracy in the developed world.
We don't need no damn democracy.
Is democracy so good? Why did it get Hitler to where he was?
Yeah.
Because that's what democracy did. It put Hitler in place. He didn't overthrow the country and said, right, I'm the man with the big trousers. You do what you're told or you're going to end up shot.
Our country was set up as a representative republic. It never was intended on being a democracy, but yet the mainstream media will tell everybody, oh, we're your democratic society, you know, and so on and so forth.
Are you familiar with the story about how Hitler rose to power? That there's a conspiracy theory that he burnt the Reichstag, their parliament, and blamed it on the communists and got elected on the back of that.
You know,
well,
what?
I heard a different angle to that story from the perspective of a German, and that was they knew that the Nazis had been collecting data and information on people for a long period of time, and the area that was bombed in the Reichstag fire, or rather like the area that was burnt, were the records of the population.
Nothing surprises me.
Those records were actually burned to protect the people of Germany from, you know, all the various stuff that the Germans had done. So, I mean, that's a very, very different way of looking at it, and I'd suggest people look more into that.
I know it's not funny, because it was a terrible event, like every single war and the so-called skirmish out there. You know, to me, anytime somebody's shooting at somebody else, it's a war, period, you know. Anytime there's death and destruction, you're at war. But the way that people are told about the true history of all the things that's going on out there, it seems like it's trying to be sugarcoating to make it look like, hey, I'm the good guy, I'm the government, I come in there to make sure that everybody's doing fine. You know, so I had to burn a few things and kill a few people, but it's all, you know, the ends justifies the means crap, you know?
What do you think of the Chinese new aircraft carrier?
I don't know, I missed out on that one, but, you know...
There was a report recently where the Chinese are sticking two fingers up to the US saying, ours is bigger than yours. Because it is.
Well... You know, hey, it's their country, their resources, and if they want to work hard and make it a good country, then so be it, you know. It's just, man, when does it stop? The only explanation, the only reasonable thing that we can, you know, ascertain from all the information that we share with one another is that it is not going to ever stop until the average Joe begins to empower themselves with knowledge, you know, and sharing that knowledge freely amongst each other. You know, here's the thing, dude. When we sit here as we're trying to live the American dream and we want to try to keep up with the Joneses and we're buying this house and that car and we want this big plasma TV and all this kind of stuff, we're under this big old illusion that by building this stairway to heaven, so to speak, with all the money and hard work that we got, that we're going to make our world a better place, thus forth making the people around us a better, you know, because we'll now have funds that we can help out, eat one another and all that kind of stuff. Well, in reality, all these things ever accomplish is enslaving us even further, because now everyone is so dazed, confused, walking zombies, and they believe that the only way that they can truly be happy is if they get some more gold, some more shiny stuff, you know. In the meantime, the world as we know it standing around us is falling apart at the seams. We're on the verge of civil wars in many different countries. We're on the verge of World War III. And all these things that they have acquired throughout their entire lifetime are in jeopardy because the government's already put regulations and executive orders into place that if all heck breaks loose, they can come over and seize your food. They can seize your ammunition. They can seize your house. They can seize your car. If one of these government officials needs your car to go out and chase a bad guy, he just comes up, puts a gun in your face, says, get out, and you got to get out.
That's Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, the computer game, Grand Theft Auto, that's what you used to do. Used to run around and so you grab a car door handle, pull it open, stick a gun in someone's face, bang their head on the dashboard, pull them out, and drive off in their car.
Yeah,
so computer games is this. I mean, that shouldn't be real life.
If you do that, you're going to jail. If they do that, it's for the better of humanity. Really?
Yeah, if they do that and you tell them to piss off, then give them a smack in the mouth, then you get arrested for assaulting a government official.
Yeah. So there you go. The odds are stacked against you. And I'm going to bring this up because I saw this video one time, and I hope everybody goes out and looks at this video and just literally absorbs it in. There's a video out there called The Dots. It's just about a whole bunch of dots that are listening to a little tiny amount of dots. And the little tiny amount are the ruling class, the so-called elite of the world. And they're telling all these dots what to do and what not to do. And when you look at this, it has to dawn on you how stupid it is for all the billions of people on this planet. We're being ruled by probably 1 or 2% of the world. And they're not doing a good job. Tell me they've done a good job in your country. They're doing a terrible job in mine.
Well, this is what I'm saying about there is a small group of people that have been pulling the strings for quite a long time, and they're starting to deal with the consequences of failure, because I don't think that this outcome is how they intended it.
No, it ain't.
I mean, every now and again, it's obvious in history that there are groups of people throughout history that have literally broken down and destroyed a society to rebuild it in the way they want it.
Yep. And
there's evidence of that throughout history. Well, why would it be any different now?
it's blatantly obvious of their concern whenever you start seeing all these legislations trying to take away everybody's rights and, you know, like gun legislations and all this kind of stuff, you know, violating the Second Amendment or the First Amendment. They violate every amendment of every constitution in every country, supposedly on your behalf to protect the children, while at the same time sending drone strikes over to foreign nations and basically killing children. So at one side of their mouth, we're here to protect the children. Now, at the opposite side of their mouth, oh, those are just collateral damage. That'll be okay. The ends justifies the means crap. And you don't see the average Joe running out there freaking mopping a group of kids on one side of town and saying, we're here to protect the children on the opposite side of town. You don't see that, you know?
Well, I mean, the way I see it, in democratic republics, I mean, they're two separate things, because the democratic process is, you know, you put yourself out there and, you know, if you get the most votes, you win. So it's a bit like X Factor, really.
Yeah, mob rules. So if 100 people got the wrong answer, there's no check and balance. 100 people do the wrong thing, you know?
At least in the Big Brother house.
Yeah, if
once a week they chuck someone out, but in the Senate, and the Doyle and the Oireachtas and all of these various parliamentary buildings around the world. It's like the Big Brother house, but they don't kick anybody out at all.
You know, the only time...
they just sit there indefinitely.
You know, the only time you ever see a congressman or a senator or one of the representatives around the world get beat up or sent off jailed or whatever is when they buck the system. It's not when they buck us. They can buck us all they want. It's when they buck the system. So, you know, okay, I don't agree, so I'm not going to vote this way. Oh, wait, look, this guy over here, he was into illegal gambling, so we got to send him to jail.
Well, here's a little breakdown on some of the politics of the Philippines that I found online. Now, I'm not going to swear by this because I can't verify it, but it's an interesting thought. The president of the Philippines, Aquino, his father was assassinated by the Marcos family. Now, the nephew of Imelda Marcos is the mayor of, governor of the Tacloban region, the worst hit area by the storm. And because the prime minister doesn't trust, or the president doesn't trust Imelda Marcos's nephew, he's having a lot of the goods and resources delivered to a town near Tacloban to make sure they actually get to the people. It's his fight for corruption, apparently. Now, I mean, I can't verify that as being perfectly accurate, but the guy himself is the nephew of Imelda Marcos, and the president's father was allegedly assassinated by the Marcos family. So,
well,
there's two parts there that are true.
According to the information of the mainstream media, the North Korean guy whacked his own uncle.
Sure, why not?
I mean, come on, man. Seriously?
Isn't that what the mad and inbred have been doing for thousands of years? Yeah. Cousins is considered a redneck thing, unless marrying you actually happen to be royalty, then it's par for the course.
Oh, I'm telling you, dude, it just, it never ceases to amaze me that the average Joe can sit around and watch and listen to all this stuff and still follow the same amount of dots instead of saying, look, you know, you guys are doing a terrible job. The people decide we're gonna go along without you. You know, you go ahead and play your game over on your side, and we're gonna start a new game. And we're gonna actually build the better world, and we could do it. You know, there's no reason why we couldn't do it. If we get the dream team together, like you were talking about earlier, there isn't nothing that we can't accomplish. And as far as clean energy, alternative energy, the holy grail being zero point energy, it's there. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, and or you just don't have the resources to make it happen, because it's there, man. The ideas are so abundant. You know, there's so many really knowledgeable individuals out here that have done so much research and can step back and look at the big picture and figure out solutions to problems that exist, but yet they have problems because this guy may be the most brilliant mind in the world, but he needs access to somebody who can weld in and make it look good and make it strong and everything. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, looking for solutions A friend of mine asked me if I fancy going ice diving in the Bering Sea. And yeah, I'd give that a try. I wouldn't be too worried about that. I mean, I don't mind small spaces anyway, so being under 4 feet of ice in 6 feet of water wouldn't bother me in the slightest. But is that what the Western world has come to? The only way we can really get ahead, unless we're part of some corporate scheme, group or institution, is to literally go off and try and grab precious metals from the bottom of a frozen ocean bed.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks out there, you know, trying to find gold in so many different directions, and, you know, they have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to try to make thousands and thousands of dollars, and sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but, you know, shoot, if you actually had the resources to do, there'd be enough to go around. It wouldn't be no need for all this craziness, you know.
Well, I mean, they talk about gold hunting. What about, I mean, it depends on how you value wealth. I mean, what would be considered, people consider wealth? Would it be personal wealth, or would it be the wealth of the environment and the groups around you? Because, well, I mean, another way of hunting gold would be going to areas where people have very little to eat and show them how to set up systems to grow food.
Yeah.
And fish. Aquaponics.
I agree 100%.
I mean, it can be done in a wide variety of regions, even those that are very high sort of temperature areas.
You know,
it can be done. It's not impossible. It may work more effectively in certain regions than others, but it will keep you alive.
In the long term, what do we use the gold for? We use the gold to buy food. We use the gold to buy medicine. We use the gold to buy resources. We use the gold to buy nice, shiny things, you know? And there's no reason why, you know, we couldn't do at least the food portion of it, you know?
Well, we're going to have elections coming up soon in Ireland, and local elections for the councils. And I'll be asking the councillors what they're going to do about the fact that where the average industrial wage in Ireland was around about €35,000 in the boom, it's dropped to about €28,000 now, and probably drop a little bit more before they're finished with it. But politicians are still giving themselves €96,000 a year in salary and another €96,000 a year in pension. So, I mean, what is that? That's €192,000 just on their salary and pension, when the average person has to pay a pension out of less than 35.
Yeah, and the funny thing about all of that is that the average person is actually paying that salary via their taxes.
Yeah, so, I mean, what are they talking about? They haven't got enough money to run the country, and they have to take away... I mean, what they have here, they have a medical card for... people in circumstances that can't afford to pay it. It's a discretionary medical card, because yeah, you might have a couple of quid in the bank, but it doesn't necessarily mean you have enough to long-term fund a serious illness. They've taken away medical cards from children with Down syndrome and terminally ill patients with cancer.
Yeah,
I mean, at the same time, they're taking home €192,000 a year. It's just insane. We've got semi-state bodies that were supposed to have their salaries capped, and what they've been doing is charitable institutions have been using people's donations to top up people's salaries to €660,000 a year, because the government put a limit on it. So they're using donations to top up these salaries.
Well, yeah, and it's sickening when you talk about donations. You see all these commercials all the time on TV about, you know, people starving and then people needing this and people needing that. And then whenever they have to, you know, you send your money in, they say at least 80% of all of the money you send in is going to go to, you know, the starving people of the world. Why?
Well, I mean, somebody asked me if I wanted to donate to solve world hunger. I said, well, they got hundreds of millions in the 80s and they didn't do anything constructive with it then, so why would I bother now?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to donate money to make sure that an executive gets to drive around in a flash Audi A8 as his company car whilst he's running around trying to money grub and, you know, ask people with lots of money to make donations. That's not what I'm interested in.
Just
if I want to help people on a world hunger basis. So I need to go where they are and get involved and get the hands dirty there, because giving money to people doesn't fix it.
No, do like Dublin said, guerrilla charity. Go over there with a care package and hand it to them personally, you know.
Go over there with a shovel and dig a garden for them.
Yeah, something.
I mean, one of the things that I have to point out is many of the people in the world are not stupid by any stretch of the imagination, but they do not have access to the resources to educate themselves.
Oh, and this is why I call it mad science, man. Because
yeah.
I see the world. I can see it. You can see it. You know, we can sit here and we can look that there's so many abundant resources. The earth is 3/4 covered in water, more than enough fuel and water to go around. You know, the earth has the land that's been locked up, thousands and millions of acres of land that's been locked up supposedly by the government to protect, you know, national reserves and stuff like that, you know. They take a big, you were saying earlier, it takes about a 1 acre to feed a family, okay. Take a million acres of this land that's locked up.
It takes 1 acre to feed a couple. Well, it takes more acres to feed a family.
Okay, well, take some of this doggone land out there and plant some food and let them come over and get this food. How hard's that? You know?
One of the things that I've seen that has really seemed to get on the nerves of the European Union is the concept of homesteading, where you literally sever the ties with the government and you say, right, well, I've paid taxes for this, that and the other and it isn't working for me, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to support myself because I'm a big boy now. I've grown up. I know how to produce electricity. I know how to take water from a well and purify it so it's safe for human consumption. I know how to make honey. I know how to make beer. I can do all of the things that I need to do myself. So if I use the roads, I'll give you a bit of road tax. But I don't need mainline electricity to pay them a standing order of €15 a month to supply us with an infrastructure which they're basically siphoning up into private funds. You know, it's nonsense. We don't need that massive infrastructure anymore because we're more than capable of taking care of ourselves. But you keep putting barriers in the way of it.
Yeah, and that's the whole key there, man. We got to get the average Joe out there on board to actually build the dream team, support your local inventor, support your local gardener, farmer, you know, anybody who gets out there and puts hard labor in towards making something that's going to benefit society, support them with everything you got. You know, if you got a tool that they need, help them out with that tool. You know, if you don't want to just give it to them, go over there and help them use it.
Well, what I've come to realise, and it's quite a sad realisation, I mean, I'm 41 years old now. I'm not getting any younger as anybody is. But I finally worked out that the only real way to get yourself free from this sort of nanny state is to have enough money to buy your way out.
And how, brother? So,
I mean, what does it cost to buy your way out? You're going to need 5 acres of land to be really productive. And be able to contribute something back to the local area that you live in as well. And to buy 5 acres with a house on it is beyond the imaginings of most people, to be perfectly honest, that would have a standard factory industrial wage. They would not be within their grasp to be able to achieve that in a reasonable time frame. Because from what I've seen, you're talking €400,000 to €500,000, €500,000 is what it would cost you to get yourself set up on a homestead. Now, it's possible to do it a lot cheaper and a lot easier, but with all the benefits that science can offer us, the labour is taken out of it in a massive way. A couple of people can now support themselves and contribute to the community. It's just those technologies cost money.
Oh, yeah, they tax the fuel and everything. Say, we're getting down...
It's not even the taxation as such, it's just actually buying the resources you need. I mean, you were talking about stainless steel earlier. If you wanted to get a stainless steel vat for brewing beer, if you wanted to run a microbrewery, say, and then run that out of your homestead and sell it in the local farmers market, there's no reason why you shouldn't do that because it's home produce. I mean, if you wanted to make cheeses, just buying the equipment that's easy to use, easy to sterilise, that's hygienic and, you know, isn't going to pick up bacteria, you know, all of this stuff that's been ergonomically designed specifically for the task is more expensive than stuff that you can build yourself.
Yep.
But it is reliable. You are in a position then when you can actually contribute back to the society in a safe and clean, healthy environment.
We're getting down to the wire here. You want to take a quick music break and get some fresh coffee and then come back and wind this thing down?
Sounds good to me, mate.
All right, cool. Everybody, I'm going to put on a couple tunes. First one, I'm going to put on Molly Hatchet, Flirting with Disaster. I play this a lot because essentially that's what humanity is doing, because we keep feeding the beast that's eating us alive and destroying our world. So, you know, take a ride with Molly Hatchet, because literally we are flirting with disaster, and that's a fact.
Yeah. trouble on my danger. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now.
He has no friends to help him now.
Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
Hello everybody, you're listening to Shazoo's Mad Science, and I got my friend Steve here, and we've been talking about all kinds of different subjects, and copper being one of the pretty cool elements out there that has a lot of qualities. What do you think about copper there?
Well, we didn't really cover copper much, did we?
Well, we did to some extent, but I put a link or two in the chat room, and I think you put a link in there as well that people you know, can do a little bit of research on there, but it's some pretty amazing stuff, man.
Well, I mean, copper's been around for a very, very long period of time. Humans have been working with it for thousands of years, and I don't think it's going to go away in the near future. I mean, in my computer here, I bought one of the first generations of i7 processors about 4 years ago in 2009, the i7-940. It uses a lot of power, about 135 watts, so it produces a lot of heat, which means there's a massive amount of copper on that motherboard, and I certainly won't be throwing that away when it finally gives up the ghost. I'll be melting it down and using it.
Well, yeah, you know, and heat is not just good for conducting electricity. It's also good for, or copper is not just for good for conducting electricity. It's good for conducting heat. A lot of the pans out there that they make that are really good have a copper coating on the bottom of them.
Copper smelting is not beyond the capacity of the average person with some basic equipment like the cheap pumps. I mean, here, every now and again, you'll have a summer special in a petrol station where, you know, if you buy $50 worth of fuel, then you can buy this little pump for inflating your beds, inflatable beds at the seaside, that sort of stuff. You know, if you look that up next to a decent fuel flame, pump enough air into it, you should be able to get enough temperature out of that if you set it up right to smelt copper.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine, Larry. He's actually been in a video or two with me. he built a little smelter, and he used like concrete for the liner in there, and made his own crucible and everything like that. And it's exactly how he does that, is what he'll put like charcoal inside there and get it on fire, you know, like regular barbecue charcoal. And then he'll blow air into it, and it's got enough heat to it'll melt aluminum and copper and other materials.
Well, one of the things I've looked at recently is for melting metals. I mean, even down to the point of, what was that stuff we were talking about a while back that grows as crystals? It's like a byproduct of a lot of copper smelting and stuff like that. There was, bismuth.
Yeah, bismuth.
So, I mean, what was my point? Yeah, even melting down bismuth, what you can use is Portland cement, 100% pure, just add water to it, and you can make crucibles, which will actually withstand the heat, if as long as you make sure that you do it right and there's no air bubbles in it, so they're going to heat up and crack and expand and crack the cement. You can use these pure Portland cement crucibles to melt down metals with.
Well, that's more good knowledge. Well, brother, we're coming down to the wire here. We got like 9 minutes left of the Mad Science Show, and we've had a lot of good stuff on there. And talked about a second ago, all you folks out there listening, appreciate, come over and visit in on the Shaziz chat room. It's not as good as some of the other chat rooms out there, but like to see you and hear your comments and stuff like that. And the way my computer's set up, I don't really have the processing power, so to speak, to put up all the different chat rooms at one time, because it slows me down when I'm trying to broadcast. But hopefully I'll get that rearranged and get a better chat room up in there. But come over and say hi or something like that. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, yeah, come over. I mean, the facilities are there for you. Come and use them.
Yeah, and it's all...
Help us arrive at the solutions we need by contributing to the conversation.
Yeah, and if there's somebody out there, if you believe in what they're working on, their alternative energy deal, and you've done the research and you actually believe in their what they're working on, if you can afford to donate to them, you know. I just, you know, when I first started out, I heard a lot of complaints on YouTube about donations and such, and, you know, I didn't want to come off like I'm trying to milk people with money or anything like that. So I never put up no donation button. You know, that would have probably been beneficial for me, but I figured, you know, I'm advertising free energy, and that's what I want to try to accomplish. But I found that, you know, in the long term, I've pretty much slowed myself down. What do you think?
The resources that we require are there, but they're not within my current ability to be able to purchase. Hopefully there'll come a point where I can scrape enough shekels together to go up and buy a 3D printer.
Yep.
Because once I have the ability to be able to make precision items, then I can start doing some real effective research. I mean, there's one of the things that I'm working on at the minute is a heat-sensitive switch. Now, you can buy them in Radio Shack and Maplin's, you know, just unbuilt circuit boards that you build yourself. But the idea of that is I need to hook that up to a mechanism to be able to lift the sides of the polytunnel if the temperature goes to a certain level. So you've got the motors, the gearing mechanisms, the control system to go behind that as well. It's not hugely expensive or complicated, but being able to make custom parts exactly the size that you need to fit the materials that you've already got is what a 3D printer will enable.
Yeah, the only other alternative is hot glue, duct tape, super glue, baling wire, and you just can't get enough precision out of that stuff to do what it is. And that's what the whole drawback is. So if you can help somebody out there like Desert Experimenter or Muddy Mud Man, you know, and you got some access to some tools or resources and believe in what they're trying to do, then by all means, please help them out. You know, donate if you can. And with that said, dude, we're down to like the last 6 minutes of the show. You got any good advice for folks out there?
Well, when you get disasters, if you're going to donate to a charity company, do your research, because marketing agencies have got their grubby claws into charity fundraising, to my personal knowledge, for at least 20 years. So when you're giving money to a charity, make sure it isn't being used to fund marketing companies to come knocking on people's doors to get direct debit payments, because a lot of those direct debit payments are paid directly to the company for the first 6 months before any money ever reaches the charity. It's a thing that's going on that's quite common at the minute. So do your research before you donate, because there are some good aid agencies out there where the majority of your donation goes directly to the people, and what's left over is used to maintain the infrastructure of delivery.
And that's what it needs. It needs to be able to, you need to know that it's coming from your hand to their hand, you know. Pass it on like that, because like Steve said, it's not just marketing agencies, it's freaking governments, you know. Government's got to get their hand in there. If you're supposedly a not-for-profit organization, they still figure out ways by which they can get their hand in the pot too, you know. These donations should be going to the people that they are intended for, yet they're not always doing that, and that's a damn shame. So, you know, with that
the
said...
The final fortress is the biggest weapon of mass destruction that any nation can use against its own people is the food supply.
Oh, yeah.
That's my final thought.
That's probably the most profound thing ever said, because, truthfully, nobody can deny that if you control the food, you control the population, because people have to eat, and starving to death is not a pretty sight. And so, you know, with that said... You know, do the guerrilla gardening, learn about aquaponics, learn about hydroponics, learn about how to grow food, how to forage, and there's a lot of good shows around that you can listen in on information about, you know, what it is that you can eat in your local environment without dying or whatever. And so this is good knowledge. Knowledge is power. Don't be the massive amount of dots, which is we the people that follow around the tiny little dots that keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And so with that all said, stay tuned for Beverly's Hope Show. I'm going to be hosting the show today because Beverly had a little bit of an injury and kind of suffering from some side effects due to her injury. And I hope that I do her show justice. And everybody out there, thanks for joining in. And stay tuned tomorrow for the Knights of the Round Table. And for all you knights out there listening, sure could use you on the show. We always come up with good ideas and solutions. So peace and love, everybody. And I'm going to play us out of here, Steve, with a little Stevie Ray Vaughan. You like that, Stevie Ray Vaughan?
Does the job, mate.
Yeah, if the house is a-rocking, don't come a-knocking. All right, peace and love, everybody. Take care. Stay tuned for Beverly's Hope Show.
Got nothing to lose. Sing it all. crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.